present the News Quiz with your chairman for 1 week only, John Sargent.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a clipping from a church and community magazine read by Charlotte Green.
Piddle Trentide and plush millennium plans. Several suggestions were made, including creating a link with a less privileged Christian community on the same longitude in, say, Africa, or maybe the northeast of England.
Thanks to a missionary in Piddle Hinton, Dorset, for sending that to us. Now let's meet the teams. On my right, Captain Francis Ween, and his guest, Telegraph columnist Boris Johnson. And on my left, the redoubtable Alan Corran and comedian and author Tony Hawkes. Right, round one. Francis, which trade war isn't the least bit appealing?
Bananas. The Americans have this idea that we should all be forced to eat, well, not their bananas, actually. They're all from Latin America, these bananas, but the companies in Latin America are all owned by North American conglomerates. And so we're being forced to eat their bananas, and as we won't eat their bananas, because we prefer to buy them from the Commonwealth, they won't buy our cashmere, and the World Trade Organization has come down on their side, and the EU has been bullied into agreeing that no more shortbreads will be sent to Saskatchewan ever again. Something like that, I don't know.
I think the right is actually on the side of the Americans in this terrible dispute. I think the reality of the banana thing is that we would have the opportunity to eat these fantastic dollar bananas.
But they're not very nice.
No, they are. They're much bigger, shinier.
Sizes, everything. Big bananas.
They are. Well, I am told that German housewives, given the choice, would much rather buy large amounts of these glorious, shiny dollar bananas rather than these preference bananas, as they're called.
How many reliable sources do you have among German housewives?
Very many reliable sources. And we are being shamefully deprived of the opportunity to buy cheap dollar bananas, large in size and juicy, because of this protectionist system that is supported by Brussels.
Any questions came to you tonight from the Scout Club?
Well, I think we've all got the idea. It was the ruling by the World Trade Organization sanctioning the US to go ahead with imposing tariffs on a wide range of products in its banana trade war with the EU. It's feared that this ruling could mean Jamaican banana growers turning instead to planting drugs. Although, just why they'd want to join the West Midlands Serious Crime Squad is anyone's guess. Right, Boris, which brave hearts set to battle this week?
Piece of cake. This refers, of course, to the outset of hostilities in Scotland, where the Labour Party and the Scottish National Party and the Tory Party and the Liberal Democrats launched their campaigns, and there may be some of the other parties I've left out. The issue is whether or not the Scots Nats do very well. They're standing on a platform of higher taxes than those proposed by the Labour government, and condemning the activity of British troops at the moment, so I don't think they're necessarily going to trouble the scorers very much.
That's a Scotsman leaving in protest. Tony, who believes a common European soul should be music to Britain's ears?
I think this would be Romano Prodi, I think, who's the new president designate. Of course, if all the EC commissioners resign, you want a president at the helm, if you like, who's a beacon of stability, someone who'd be there. So, of course, you get an ex-Italian prime minister to do that job. Right, he made his speech, or it was an interview, I think, in the Financial Times, I can't remember which, where he was just basically much more pro-Europe than Blair would have liked.
Pro-United States of Europe?
Yes.
So long as he's president?
Exactly. Well, why not? You get to do all sorts of things when you're president of the United States. The Tories have just been clutching at straws and trying to exploit this to get one vote or something like that.
Yes, brilliant answer. Tony, yes, the new head of the European Commission angered Britain's Europhobes by suggesting Britain should join the single currency if it proved to be a success. Skeptics say that in principle they are not against a single currency as long as it's the pound. Well, Alan, now, listen to this.
Take good care of my baby. Now don't you ever make her cry. Just let your love surround her, paint a rainbow all around her. Don't let her see a cloudy sky.
Well, Alan, why has the government stopped short of setting up a nanny state?
I was a bit preoccupied while I was listening to that, with Tony saying the Tories are clutching at straws, and wondering, clutching at straws what? But I've got over that now, and I think this is about... the sound you hear is Keir Hardie spinning in his grave. It's about New Labour providing booklets for New Islington parents and Blair's babe, so they can all go down to the House of Commons, leaving their kids squalling with something from Norland at 500 quid a week. I don't know what it's from. It's Secretary of State for Condescension, I think, has produced this.
Well, he tells us how to interview nannies and that sort of thing.
How do you interview them, Boris?
Well,
are you firm?
I'm ruthless. No, absolutely. We've had the same nanny for a long time now.
Tony, you keen on nannies?
Yes, but the kind of interview I do with them is not relevant here.
Right, well, that's enough. The scores at the end of round one are a stunning 4 for Francis and Boris, and an equally stunning 4 for Alan and Tony. We start round 2 with a listing from the Radio Times.
EastEnders, Grant and Peggy are reconciled and go together to scatter Tiffany's ashes. Simon and Terry fall out.
Thanks to Roger Harrison of Crawley for that. Francis, why shall nation no longer speak peace unto nation?
Oh, well, this is a rather sensitive question, since we are broadcasting on the very institution that has laid down these guidelines. There's the B word, which we're not allowed to say anymore.
No, the BC, as it's called.
And I noticed on my way in here, actually, that they've changed it. It's very easy here, because they just transposed the letters. It's now called the British Broadcasting Corporation and British Airways and all these other things. They're going to have to change their names, logos, the whole lot, if they want to be plugged on television or radio. And it's something to do with devolution.
I think it's a very complicated thing, this abolishing of the British business.
Well, it's going to mean that every morning on the Today programme, John Humphreys can no longer interview Leon Britton. He's going to have...
That was a very good point. There's that woman called... The woman who does the weather. You're not going to be talking about British weather anymore, are you?
Are you talking about Charlotte, who is with...
No, absolutely not. But there's a thing called...
The weather forecast?
That's right. Sean Lloyd does his weather forecast for the whole of the United Kingdom. And I always wonder, since she's such a passionate Welsh nationalist, whether she feels entirely happy.
How do you know she's a passionate Welsh nationalist?
Because she's...
I mean, Welsh nationalists I accept, but it's the rest of it.
Well, I think, watching it, I think she has a bias towards Wales in the weather. I think she does linger.
She gives them more sun.
I think only happy...
But what are the effects, though? Presumably it rains just the same, whatever she says is going to happen.
The effect is, for instance, things she says about England turn out to be completely fallacious.
And unfair.
Unfair and downright disappointing.
Oh, so long as she's... As long as she's both passionate and fallacious, we don't mind, do we?
She can be my nanny any day.
No, I think she's wonderful. I do think she's wonderful.
Right, well, let's get back to the main point, which is the BBC has issued a new booklet, Within the Changing UK, advising special care and use of certain words, including British, country, capital and nation. One Scotsman pointed out that for years, Scottish football fans have been offended by references to English football hooligans as British, adding that the Scots have a proud tradition of hooligans of their own to defend. Boris, who is suggesting hereditary peers should get off the woolsack and lie on the couch?
Yes, I tell you exactly who it is, because I've been spotting this very hard. It's a man called Di Williams, and he runs something called Management Something Care and Resettlement of People Who've Been Sacked, or some such organisation, and he's very concerned about the fate of the poor hereditary peers, 628 of whom are going to be driven onto the not exactly the breadline, but they're going to be driven out of their hereditary role as our legislators another word for legislators, law givers, by Tony Blair, and he rightly points out that they need counsel and succour. And
need what?
A sucker.
They do need counselling, these hereditary peers, because when they lose their job, they'll have to go out into the real world and adapt to life where they'll have to be awake from time to time.
Tony, listen to this. Right, Tony, who's been cleaning up on Windows this week?
Bill Gates last week alone, I think, made £650 million, which is ludicrous. That's more than you earn in an entire year of doing the news quiz. No, really. Yes, there was actually a very amusing article about this, where someone had done some research and worked out that if he put all the money that he's got in dollars under his bed, the bed would be 16 miles in the air. And he'd have to parachute down just to go to the toilet in the morning. Which is presumably why he keeps it in a bank and not under his... Apparently in 2005, he'll have more money than the gross national output, or whatever it's called, of the United Kingdom, or Britain, as they used to call it.
The Microsoft founder once claimed that if cars had evolved at the same rate as Microsoft programs, your average automobile would be able to travel to the moon and back on a cup of water, although obviously it would crash at least 74 times on the way there. Alan, at whose wedding will the ordinary folk be treated right royally?
This is Sophie Rees-Jones and Prince Edward. People, 2,000 people are going to be forced to go to this wedding.
Did you see, he wanted to give the exclusive rights to his own television company, Ardent Productions. Can you imagine Ardent? The word Ardent and Prince Edward, you can't really seem to go together. But anyway,
used to be a hearing aid, Ardent. Do you remember Ardent hearing aid? It was. People had
Ardent hearing, was it?
It was large.
It was the announcement, of course, that up to 2,000 ordinary people are to be invited to watch Edward and Sophie arriving and departing from St George's Chapel. Many of the couple's showbiz chums have been invited to the service. However, palace sources deny that when the minister asks Sophie the big question, Chris Tarrant will give her the chance of 50-50, phone a friend, or ask the congregation. And the scores at the end of round two are a terribly exciting Francis and Boris, 8, and an equally exciting 8 with Alan and Tony. We start round three with a cutting from the Hoylake and West Kirby News.
On the subject of dog mess, much hot air has recently been extruded, and indeed many readers appear caught between two stools.
Our thanks to Brenda Ellison of the Wirral for sending us that. Francis, whose fouler deed will teach him to toe the line in future?
Oh, this is a terrible thing, yes. He's been setting a bad example to the nation's youth. This is the Liverpool footballer, Sir Norman Fowler. And he...
Sometimes called Robbie.
Oh, sorry, the other one. Robbie Fowler, very much like his brother, Norman, has been misbehaving because he scored a goal, penalty, against Everton, then kneeled down and lowered his head to the turf. And it was thought that he was sniffing the goal line, or snorting it. Anyway, it was thought to be bad because young people, until then, had been under the impression that grass was something you smoked, and now they discover it's on football pitches. And they're going to go around digging up Wembley and Old Trafford and places and snorting it.
Has the Prime Minister intervened in the Fowler?
Presumably he will. He's got a few other things he's worried about.
I don't see how Fowler can remain in his position.
No.
Got the, not on the ground, I mean, but...
You sense a resignation coming
I do think the resignation is probably... I think the Prime Minister should call for his resignation in all honour and consistency, I think.
You think it's worse than...
Yes, I think it's...
Worse than reincarnation.
It's spinning out of control.
Well, I liked the response from Gerard Houllier, the Liverpool manager, when it first happened. They interviewed him, and he just completely misunderstood. He said, there's nothing wrong with this. It is funny. He's pretending to eat like a cow or whatever. Absolutely true.
Well, we've all got it. Boris, here's your music. Well, Boris, which line of inquiry engages the mind in heated debate?
Yeah. Now, that was the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, apparently, was it?
Yes, that's yes, not the question. It right. was, in fact, the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, but try and concentrate.
The answer is that mobile telephones do not, contrary to widespread alarmist reports, fry your brains. They merely warm them.
Al dente.
that's right. What is brains al dente, would you say?
Very nice.
Yeah. They warm your brains, and I think they increase your desire to drink alcohol. That's also been demonstrated on rats. They got some rats to dial up each other on their mobiles.
Well, there are so many of them now. I mean, I was on this train the other day, and this guy in front of me was making so many mobile phone calls, it was just like being in his office, you know. I wouldn't have minded, but he had me doing photocopying. His wife's away this weekend, I've got to go to Paris with him.
The study said regular mobile phone users, such as journalists, need have no fear of suffering from short-term memory loss. And the study said regular mobile phone users, such as journalists, need have no fear of suffering short-term memory loss. Tony, which cure for stomachache is tasty, tasty, very, very tasty?
It's pig food.
Well, that's what it is, isn't it, John?
It's
a bar called Cellulol, which is made from the thighs of women. and pig food, and you eat it before going to foreign parts.
Good week for food, because there was also another story about the super egg as well, wasn't it? That if they inject bits of fish vitamins into an egg, you eat that, and that's fantastic for you. Apparently, cures cancer, low cholesterol, enhances your brain. You grow fins. But apart
there was
from...
there was another food story about the man who went into a doctor's surgery, and he had a sausage in his left ear and a chip up either nostril. And the doctor said, you know your trouble, you're not eating properly.
that was in the Telegraph on Wednesday, wasn't
it? No, it was in the Telegraph, in 1923.
We've already heard mention of this new super egg. Scientists say the giant egg will go into production as soon as they've invented a hemorrhoid cream for chickens. Alan, why might Britain's heritage soon be the pits?
Oh, yes, this is the minister called Chris. Why doesn't he call himself Christopher? I mean, Chris Smith has approached UNESCO, saying that it's all very well having the pyramids, but we have wonderful heritage sites in England like the M25 and Thora Herd, and we want to get a great deal of money so that people can come and look at these things and see Clapham Common for what it really is. And it's a new list of British heritage sites to be put alongside the Taj Mahal and the Grand Canyon.
Absolutely right. And the scores at the end of round three are both lots 12. Before we start the final round, here's an item seen in the Gloucestershire Echo.
A Ford Orion was discovered on fire in suspicious circumstances in Brockworth Lane, Cheltenham. It was gutted.
And thanks to Penny Callahan of Cheltenham for sending us that. Francis, listen to this. The flowers and the breeze make conversation with the trees. Really, to leave reality behind me. With my commitments in a mess, my sleep has gone away. Deep rest in a world of fantasy. You'll find me. I'm just sitting watching flowers and trees. Francis, which council worker didn't bother to mind his blooming language?
Well, there you have me. It's...
Can I come in here?
Yes,
I think
certainly.
I know.
Yes.
I love this. I read this. I think it's fantastic. It's a guy who got the sack. I think he was a council gardener. And he didn't like the fact he would be given the sack. But his revenge was slow because he planted some daffodils that when they grew, a few years later, in fact, spelt shag and bollocks.
Yeah, let's move on quickly now, yes.
Oh, brilliant. They didn't notice it for quite a while, but people were crashing their cars, reading it.
How could they have seen that it said shag and said what it said unless they were flying in a helicopter above it?
Because I imagine, Boris, and I don't know for sure, but I was imagining it was on one of those banks can read it.
Good
like
point.
That. But, you make another couple of mobile phone calls.
Flowers spelling a word referring to two items of male genitalia that begin with B and end with S have been snipped by local residents. The word now spells E-U-N-U-C-H. Boris, is this a middle management training course I see before me?
Come, let me clutch thee.
No.
I have thee, no. As you were. I have thee not.
Do you know this?
Canst thou speak properly?
Cranfield University, School of Management, where all these high-flying business people go to study. They're going to send them off on Shakespeare courses because they feel that this is more useful. And I don't blame them, because if you ever read these awful management manuals that are so successful these days, all called sort of, you know, how to swim with the sharks and wrestle with the monkeys or something, the management secrets of Attila the Hun. I mean, actually, he never ran a successful company in his life, but they don't seem to know this. And they're fed up with all these bogus management manuals, and they're going back to reading Shakespeare, where they can learn far more. They get to be taught by people from the RSC, so they get to watch Julius Caesar and learn about the art of backstabbing, that sort of thing, I think. And Macbeth, jolly useful, I should think, in these circles. Yeah. Almost all of them are about how to clamber your way over dead bodies to the top.
Yes, that's it. Tony, whose obsession with the 1970s police show is a matter of degree?
Yes, the fellow who's a postgraduate student who's doing TV studies, which means he has to dress up as a woman at the weekend. I got confused. Television studies. His dissertation is on the Sweeney, I think, and a few people are sort of criticising it and saying it's rather trivial, but he maintains it's a great cultural piece of work. His classic lines like, "Shut it, you're nicked," and other lines I can't remember.
That was the only line in the entire show.
We had a long piece about it recently, and they say, "We're the Sweeney and we ain't had our breakfast," that's what they say. And get the shooters, George. Get the shooters, George.
They said it exactly like that. It's very good.
Yes, a graduate hopes to study 1970s TV show The Sweeney for his master's degree. He claims The Sweeney broke the mould of cosy TV cop shows. The police have denied this, saying the mould broke itself when it accidentally fell down the stairs. Alan, why will it now take hydraulic lifting equipment and six strong cobbers to chuck a certain prawn on the barbie?
They have found a prawn in Australia about 200 feet long, and they're all eating it. They're tucking into this thing. It is a Jurassic prawn. It's been there at the bottom of the sea forever, and wished to return to as primitive a culture as it could find, and came up off Australia. Where they ate it, they will eat anything that moves off Australia. And there's a horrible picture of it in Boris's own newspaper where it actually looks like a scorpion, because it doesn't have ordinary prawn things at the front. It's got these huge claws.
Australian scientists who've described the Jurassic prawn as being pinkish in colour, spineless and completely lacking a tail end, say they haven't seen anything like it since the England cricket squad left in April. Right, before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
John, this is from Thursday's Daily Telegraph. You wouldn't think it possible that there was any light relief from this war, but there is. The Telegraph has found it. The Washington Correspondent reports, the Natural Law Party's presidential candidate has suggested that President Clinton should send 7,000 yogic flyers to the Balkans to stop the war with brainwaves. He's written to Mr. Clinton and Vice President Al Gore, urging them to consider the possibility that hordes of transcendental meditators flipping about cross-legged in selected Balkan hotel rooms would provide the exit strategy everyone is looking for. He has not yet heard back from the President.
Boris? This is from the Reverend J.B. Smith, who sent in a copy of his In Touch, his local Conservative newspaper, and it reports that Sir Paul Beresford, Mole Valley's MP, is spearheading the campaign to ensure that the government does not target the Green Belt for new housing development. Your local Conservatives are keeping a close watch on these proposals and will fight any plants to loosen restrictions on development in the Green Belt.
Tony, this is sent in by Simon Harth from the Stevenage Comet. It's a little advert. It says, for sale, cheap electric guitar and powerful amplifier. Phone after 6 p.m. If boy answers, please ring off and call later.
Alan?
Well, I have a touching vignette, John, from the Waltham St. Anthony Parish News. And it says, the long argument concerning the stile giving access from the village green to Church Close was resolved on Tuesday night when the parish council voted to replace the traditional rustic feature with a wooden gate. We recognise that the stile has been a much-loved feature of the village for centuries, said Councillor Mrs. Marsden, but we had to take account of how hard it is for elderly people to get their leg over.
Thank you all. And now let's look at the final score. And at last, we've got a difference. Francis and Boris trailing with 14. Alan and Tony, the clear winners, with 18. And before we leave you, here's an item spotted in the Irish Times by Mrs. Emma Pumaser of Dublin.
Dear Sir, Madam, please note that an entry on the Register of Electors in your name has been deleted for the following reason. Death. If you have any objections, please notify me in writing.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Wheen, Tony Hawkes and Boris Johnson. The chairman was John Sargent and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was John Rolfe.